Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 2nd, 2013. I'm Annalisa VanHook, and today I'll be speaking with Kari Alitalo about how related growth factors trigger distinct biological effects, even though they bind to the same receptor. Vascular endothelial growth factors, or VEGFs, are secreted ligands that regulate the development and repair of blood and lymphatic vessels by binding to VEGF receptors. There are several members of the VEGF family of ligands, as well as several VEGF receptors and co-receptors that mediate signaling. The biological response is determined by the combination of ligands, receptors, and co-receptors that are present in a particular tissue at a particular time. For example, the ligand VEGF-A binds to both VEGF receptor 1 and VEGF receptor 2, but the ligand VEGF-B binds only to VEGF receptor 1. A related ligand called placental growth factor, or PLGF, also binds to VEGF receptor 1. VEGF-B binding to VEGF receptor 1 induces angiogenesis only very weakly. However, PLGF induces angiogenesis robustly in the same tissue. Because VEGFs induce blood vessel development, they're potentially useful for treating diseases in which tissues have become deprived of oxygen due to defects in blood vessel formation or function. During development, the abundance of the ligands and the receptors varies between different tissues and over time. Therapeutic use of VEGFs for stimulating angiogenesis would necessarily involve expressing VEGFs in tissues where they're not normally present, or altering the natural mix of ligands that's present in the tissue of interest. And so for this reason, it's important to understand how different VEGF ligands induce different biological outputs, and how the presence of multiple VEGFs affects angiogenesis. In a new study published in this week's issue of Science Signaling, Kari Alitalo's group has investigated the molecular basis for distinct biological effects mediated by binding of different ligands to the VEGF receptor 1. Alitalo is a researcher at the University of Helsinki. Hi, Dr. Alitalo. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you very much.
There are several VEGF ligands and several VEGF receptors and co-receptors, and different combinations of ligands and receptors can lead to distinct biological outputs. The two ligands that you focused on in this study were VEGF-B and PLGF. How do the biological outputs of signaling by these two ligands differ?
There has been a striking finding in tissues when you expose, for example, the muscle to placenta growth factor or PLGF. You get very nice arterialized vessels, which means that you essentially perpetuate the angiogenic, the vessel-building ability of the growth factor. Whereas VEGF-B, which binds exactly to the same receptors, doesn't provoke a signal. So we cannot see angiogenesis beyond the background. And because of this puzzle, we have been interested in what is the basis for the differential activity. If there's binding to the same receptors, would one of these factors have an associated receptor or some other signaling mechanism? We first went for the receptor-specific differences in the binding and signal transduction by these receptors, and that's what the study is about. They bind to this very same receptor, VEGF receptor 1, and they also bind to a co-receptor that is called neuropilin. What we discover in our study is that the receptor binding differs significantly. The way they twist the receptor is certainly different between the two factors.
These two ligands bind the receptor in a different way. You said they twist the receptor differently. How does the receptor translate those different interactions into different biological outputs?
So the mere binding of the ligand to the distal part of the receptor is just bringing two receptor polypeptides close together, but they are not sufficiently intimately associated to allow the activation of the tyrosine kinase domain, the signaling domain inside of the cells. We found that PLGF binding, which transduces an activation signal, indeed interacts with additional components of the receptor, namely so-called immunoglobulin-like domain 3, whereas VGFB has either very weak interactions with this receptor or none at all. And this results in a difference in the extracellular domain conformation, you could say twisting of the receptor, reorienting the signaling domain so that the activation can occur in the tyrosine kinase domains inside of the cell.
You said that PLGF, which is the ligand that, robustly induces angiogenesis, interacts with the immunoglobulin domain of the receptor. Can you predict whether or not other VEGF ligands would also robustly induce angiogenesis by whether or not they're modeled to bind to that immunoglobulin domain?
Yes, absolutely. When we model and actually based on crystal structure of VGF in a complex with VGF receptor 1, when we model the other ligands in a similar fashion, we can see a difference in how the ligands interact with domain 3. So in PLGF and VGFA, there is a loop 1 of the ligand that is brought into close juxtaposition to the domain 3 and allows interactions with that domain. Whereas in VGFB, some of the elements that stabilize loop 1 are missing, and therefore it doesn't provoke a similar degree of interaction. So this is very consistent with the model and indeed with our study, where we spliced the different parts of the ligands together, swapping domains, and we could actually, by moving loop 1 from PLGF to VGFB, we could make an active ligand out of it. Similarly, by swapping the loop 1 from VGFB to PLGF, we made it inactive. This confirms that loop 1 is indeed very crucial in the activation of VGF receptor 1.
There's a lot of interest in developing VGF inhibitors or VGFs that have enhanced activity for therapeutic uses. On the one hand, stimulating VEGF signaling might be useful for promoting blood vessel growth in cases where tissues have become ischemic or deprived of oxygen. And on the other hand, inhibiting VEGF activity could be useful for treating cancer by preventing the growth of blood vessels that tumors need to keep growing. So, you know, obviously understanding the details about how all these different VEGF ligands trigger distinct biological responses is important. Can you extend the results that you have with VEGFB and PLGF to other VEGF ligands? You already mentioned that you can extend them to understanding how VGFA is an active ligand. But are there some generalities that come from your work that you can use to understand more completely how VEGF ligands exert their effects and how it might be possible to design, you know, to tweak these ligands to get them to do what you want in a therapeutic context?
We have been very interested in attempting to create novel designer variants of these growth factors. In fact, the frustration in the field is that certain patients suffer from lack of oxygen ischemia in leg muscle or heart, and they get pain. And to alleviate that problem, one should promote vessel growth into the ischemic tissue. Now, VGFA has been tried a lot because it's an angiogenic factor, but unfortunately, it's very difficult to control the activity of that factor. You either produce an angioma, an abnormal proliferation of the endothelial cells of blood vessels, which is not really supplying more oxygen. You also promote vascular leakage, leakage of fluid into the tissue. There's swelling and there's inflammation. So there are no therapies yet for these people based on the growth factors. What we learned from this study is the crucial importance of loop 1, which was not appreciated because there was no factor that lacked this loop. Now, having done this study, we can nail down one of the crucial activities which is needed for proper activation. We have been interested in making chimeric growth factors, and we have published some of our chimeras where we can improve on the angiogenic properties of these factors. So we are proceeding to a therapeutic useful type of factor by using these kinds of splicing mechanisms where we graft loops or domains from one factor to the other, because we know they behave as individual elements in this interaction. We try to get the optimal ones, then test them in vivo for therapeutic purposes.
That's how you might be able to create molecules that would have the biological activity that you would like in terms of promoting blood vessel growth in a way that you can control.
Exactly. We even gone outside of this family. There's another endothelial-specific ligand receptor family. We found the first member of that family back in 1992. The receptor is called Tie1, and then later, Yancopoulos and others described ligands that bind to the related receptor Tie2. So these two receptors make a heterodimer, and when we fuse angiopoietin receptor binding domain to VEGF receptor binding domain, we can actually attenuate the vascular leakage. So when we create a chimeric factor, it has some of the desired properties, namely it lacks much of the vascular leakage and inflammation that is associated with VEGF activity. So I think it's possible to engineer factors for therapeutic purposes.
How about using this information for designing inhibitors of VEGF receptors?
Yeah, we have been experimenting with VEGFB for quite some time. When it was first found as a stretch of DNA having homology to VEGF by Ulf Eriksson in Stockholm, and when we cloned a full-length cDNA together and characterized it, we were first quite disappointed because it seemed to lack angiogenic activity. But then later on, we discovered that it actually has a wonderful activity in the heart. And that's one of the places where you want to have these factors to promote coronary vascular growth. In this paper, now published, we resolve why PLGF and VEGFB are so distinct, but we still are studying why and what makes VEGFB so cardiac specific. Why is it having such a nice activity in the vessels in the heart, but pretty much lacks that activity in the muscle? And we think we have some clues already. In this case, however, whatever we have tried to see whether VEGFB would promote tumor vascularization to create perhaps inhibitors against it, those experiments have consistently given negative results. Even when you overexpress VEGFB, you have less angiogenesis in the tumor. And now we, based on this study, we start to understand why that is the case, because it essentially blocks the receptor. It doesn't activate the receptor, but it binds and competes with other ligands for VEGF receptor 1. In a situation where there's an excess VEGF around, it doesn't even provide this displacement of VEGF for the other receptor, VEGF receptor 2, to promote angiogenic activity. We think endogenous levels of VEGFA in the heart can very well suffice for the activity. So if you displace VEGFA from VEGF receptor 1 so that you have more VEGF available for VEGF receptor 2, which is the major signal transducing angiogenic receptor, you actually promote angiogenesis in this setting. But in tumors, you have a vast excess of VEGFA, so clearly sufficient to induce angiogenesis. And if anything, we can see that VEGFB there doesn't promote angiogenesis. Rather, in several instances, it has inhibited angiogenesis. Part of that might be because VEGFB and VEGFA can also make heterodimers, which would have reduced activity in that kind of situation.
Thank you, Dr. Alitalo, for speaking with me.
Thank you.
That was Kari Alitalo, senior author of a paper published in the July 2nd issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Anisimov and colleagues, and it's titled The Basis for the Distinct Biological Activities of Vascular Endothelial Growth Factor Receptor 1 Ligands. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.